Mr. Peabody, Realtor.
I found the difference between the town people and the country people was quite outstanding. The town people were more mercenary than the French and the Belgians to a certain extent. I mean, first day we were welcomed with open arms and everything was free, and then the second day they put all the prices up. But the country folk were genuine, welcoming to us to their humble homes. The coffee pot was always on the stove, and anything they had was ours. So I found this all over the Low Countries, the Flemish particularly, the Flemish Belgians and the Dutch, which were probably the most welcoming of all, the most friendly people. The French townies, again, were a bit rapacious, a bit grasping, and I didn't really get on really well with them, in fact, so I much preferred the Dutch.
How long were you in Antwerp for?
I think it must have been quite... I mean, I've got it recorded in my diary. about a fortnight, I suppose, something like this, roughly.
Were there any V-weapon attacks whilst you were in Antwerp?
Yes, there were. V-1s were dropping, luckily, not near me. They were bombing Antwerp with V2s and V1s. So it was quite unpleasant at the time, although we didn't suffer any casualties, I'm glad to say. But certainly, yes, the Germans were targeting Antwerp.
And then from Antwerp?
Then we came up to the Belgian border. Crossed over into Holland, a little place called Luxgestel, I think, with a very strange name. And I remember the impression that all the Dutch were then cycling about with their yellow sashes on, and their orange sashes, which was the Dutch colour, and being very friendly. And we gradually moved up, because we were then starting to be support division for the Operation Market Garden, the Armen do. The 30 Corps were going up the middle, of course, trying to link up with the airborne, and 12 Corps were on the left trying to broaden the salient, and 8th Corps, was it, on the right doing the same. So the 3 Corps were moving up, 12 Corps assaulting, trying to battle up that one road, which was ridiculous, really. And we were trying to push the salient wider, gradually pushing the Germans back. But of course, they did resist quite strongly our efforts to widen the salient at that time. And we didn't have a lot of priority, so it was quite a hard job. So we were based more or less in over the border, just over the border from Belgium, just for quite a long while the Arnhem affair was happening.
And then, after Arnhem?
And then we, as I say, followed up, and we weren't involved at all, of course, that after the collapse we did in fact occupy what's called positions on the island. They called this peace between Nijmegen and the Rhine at Arnhem the island, which got us as far as halfway between Nijmegen and Arnhem. I think there was still quite a lot of resistance from the Germans, because they didn't want us to get that far, obviously, and we did come under shell fire, and our platoons were quite in quite exposed positions in a little place called Elst, we were stationed at a place called Bemmel, which is a little village halfway between Arnhem and Nijmegen. So we spent our time on the island, which was interesting, and then moved back through Nijmegen to Grave, a place called Grave, which was more towards Eindhoven.
How did you spend that winter of 44, 45?
Well, as far as campaigns go, we were involved in an assault on a place called Sertogenbosch, which was a divisional assault plus armoured brigade, which went very well according to the high-ups, and they said it was a brilliant exercise, very, very well carried out. The Germans were still resisting in that part of Holland, so it was by no means an easy job to take Sertogenbosch. And our machine gun platoons were disposed around the edge of the town, and there was quite a lot of fire coming back at us. But it was a lovely old town, and it was a nice place to be, despite the enemy fire. And other places in Holland.
Just before we leave Sertogenbosch,
yes.
Have you any personal memories of that attack on the town?
Yeah, well, personal memories would be not so much of an attack, but having to go with the company commander to visit the platoons across a roundabout, which was shelled quite heavily by the Germans because they knew that it was the one link out of the town northwards, and you had to sort of wait your turn, wait until the shells had stopped, and sort of dash across. And I was in a the Humber armoured car that the company commander had at his use at that time, which wouldn't have stopped much. But they were certainly shelling the outskirts of Sertogenbosch. The middle of the town was quite free of any fire. But it wasn't until we'd actually pushed them out of the suburbs that the place was free of the enemy fire.
Did you have any personal contact with any of the inhabitants of Sertogenbosch?
Yes, I did indeed. They were very pleasant. I remember we went to a local dance which they held for us, and it was great. And they were very, very, very welcoming, the inhabitants. Yes, certainly. I remember that. It was a great dance.
Did they say anything to you about the occupation there?
Not that I remember, no. I don't remember that.
Sorry, I interrupted you with you about to say where else you
went.
Oh,
just that. That was, I suppose, our main job until, of course, the veritable exercise. But
that's the Rhine crossing.
That's right. Yes. But we just had small local assaults to clear up pockets and this kind of thing, supporting across various canals around southern Holland. And again, on the borders with Belgium, we were both between Holland and Belgium most of the time on the borders with Germany, and they were mainly our job, small operations, cleaning up pockets, really, until the Ardennes do. I was going to say. The Ardennes do, then that was the next thing. We were, is that okay?
Yes.
We were all set to spend Christmas just outside Antwerp. And of course, there was a flap about the Germans breaking through. And we were sent down as backup troops. And so it was always rather irks me that the Americans tend to regard it as a totally American battle, which, of course, they were naturally the majority of the force there. But when we went down there, we relieved the 6th Airborne Division, who had been sent down. Was it 6th or the 1st? I can't remember which. Who were sent down there. And then 12th Corps, 51st Highland Division, and ourselves, the 53rd Welsh Division, were sent down there, and we spent a very, very uncomfortable, frozen January in the Ardennes. And it was quite unpleasant.
How were you accommodated there?
Billeted in on local houses. This was another of my jobs as a company eye clerk. Speaking schoolboy French, I went round and found billets for the company because I was usually on the advance party. So that that was part of my job. And we were billeted with the ordinary villagers around about the places that we were occupying. Marseille was one small town. I can't remember without looking in my records as the names of the other towns that I was in.
Had you thought that the Germans might achieve what they wanted and break through?
Well, there was a possibility. It seemed to be in the air. And of course, the Belgians got very, very panicky about it because they thought they were all coming back. Because obviously, the intention of the Germans was, in fact, to cut right across and divide the two sectors and therefore cut the forces, our forces in half. But of course, they never got further than the, not much further than the Meuse, the Liège area, because for one reason, it had been extremely foggy that Christmas, which meant that our air support was totally grounded. And that, of course, gave the Germans a great opportunity, the panzers, to push through. Soon as our planes, our Typhoons and our other planes could operate, it was really up then with the Germans, because that was it. Once we'd got the panzers in our targets, they were rocketed, and the advance just sort of faded, and it was just totally, they were totally defeated. It was the last big push, of course, that they made, the Ardennes push. But of course, it did set our timetable out for veritable, because we were going to, as it was, you know, assault down towards the Rhine, and that had to be put back while the Ardennes do was sorted out. And of course, one had all these stories about Monty's contretemps with the American generals. I needn't tell you much about Monty. Popular as he was with the troops, he wasn't very popular with anybody else.
Was he popular with you?
Well, as far as I knew about him, yes, I suppose he was. I mean, I think the great thing about him was that he was very, very keen on having sufficient material rather than use men. Particularly towards the end of the war, as our manpower position got really desperate. I mean, one could see that the people joining the depleted ranks of the frontline troops were getting younger and younger, and or older and older, because they were really scraping the bottom of the manpower barrel. This is one of the reasons, of course, that he was so careful and deliberate in his operations to try and save manpower as much as possible, because he knew the dire position. So I never met him, actually, although he did come to visit us once after hostilities and we had to salute his car as it went by. But I never met him personally. But from repute, he was very popular with the troops, certainly.
Now, if we can jump ahead to how you came to go into Germany yourself.
Yes, certainly. Well, the beginning of that, of course, was our assault through the Reichswald Forest. And I think alone of the divisions that were assaulting, the 53rd Welsh Division went right through the middle of the Reichswald, right the way down, and we were continually in combat right until the troops had reached the Rhine and we'd met up with the Americans. So we probably had the toughest job of all, because the Reichswald Forest was no picnic. It was quite horrific, dark, dank forest, full of tanks and enemy fire, cold, very unpleasant place to assault. And of course, there was only one track through, and all the traffic had to go on this one track, and which made for a really monumental hold-ups or traffic jams. So it was very unpleasant, and I say 53rd Division had the luck or ill luck to be the division that was assaulting through the middle of the Reichswald Forest. And then we went down to Goch, and finally down to the Rhine, and then we were pulled back then, and we had a wonderful 24-hour Brussels leave, which was really absolutely wonderful, because we weren't one of the assaulting divisions across the Rhine. We were follow-up. So that, finally we crossed the Rhine, not under fire, very peacefully, but we did encounter the other side, traces of the airborne invasion, because that, of course, was one of the forces that crossed the Rhine. And I remember particularly seeing a glider with the people who had been in it, the soldiers, lying in a circle, and the glider had totally burnt out. And it was quite horrific, because the fire, the flames had reached the crew and the airborne soldiers and burnt them halfway down their bodies. And I remember the straps, the brass straps on their gaiters were still glittering, and their boots were polished. It's just one of these strange little impressions one has, and yet the top half of them was no longer a man, if you've got my meaning. So it was quite an unpleasant kind of experience. And also there was a jeep, all of which had been fired for some reason, which was full of cinders, corpses, if you like, just which had been charred to death. Such little scenes of these I find stick so much in the memory. But apart from that, there wasn't a great deal of resistance from the Germans once we were over the Rhine, and once they'd overcome the assaulting forces had overcome the Germans. We moved on up towards Bocholt and then across North German plains towards Hamburg.
How did you come to go to Belsen?
I didn't. Now this is something which I can't explain, because I wasn't at Belsen, you see. Records don't show this at all, but I mean, off the record, I'm saying I had a letter from the Manchester Regiment Association saying that as I was one of the troops of Belsen, would I like to, there was some kind of commemoration or something. And I wrote back and said, No, you're mistaken. The first Manchester Group were not at Belsen. Not to my knowledge. Certainly our company wasn't, and I don't think any of our battalion were. I'm not sure where this comes about, you see. I've never claimed that I was at Belsen. It's not in my memoirs. The nearest we got was a PW camp at Fallingbostel.
Did your unit liberate that camp?
No. We didn't even. We met the soldiers who had been liberated from it. We were in the area, but I don't think we even had liberated that camp. So this is a strange story, and I'm not quite sure how the records show that the 1st Battalion Manchester Regiment was involved in Belsen. I'm certain it wasn't. But if
what kind of reception did you get from the POWs from Fallingbostel?
Oh, wonderful. Fantastic, of course. I mean, they'd just come out that afternoon and, you know, they were obviously over the moon. They were absolutely delighted to be free and just waiting to get aircraft back to the UK, of course. They seemed to be in very good nick, although some of them had been in there, obviously, since Dunkirk. They were mainly army types, with some Air Force, I think. I'm not quite sure which prisoner war camp it was. 8B, I'm not sure, anyway. But I remember we had a wonderful reception, anyway, from the chaps that were released.
What kind of reception did you get from German civilians as conquerors of their country?
Mm. Fairly sort of cold on the whole, I think, and not very friendly, but quite passive. Although we did meet later on some Germans who were very quite friendly, and we got on very well with them.
Where was that?
But that was after the end of hostilities, when we employed them as clerks and staff. There was no rancor at all, and one got on extremely well with them.
Did you ever come across any German civilian who was openly hostile?
Not specifically so, no. Now, I think we were billeted on a German family at one stage, and of course in those times you didn't ask them if you could be billeted on them. You just said, we're going to billet troops on you. Will you please vacate the house or these rooms? Bob-bob, like that. And then we just billeted our troop on them. So obviously weren't very receptive to this treatment. And I remember that the one particular family were quite openly anti-British, particularly when they saw the kind of brashness that we were enjoying, because they themselves naturally were on pretty much starvation rations at the time. And I remember our headquarters cook had laid out a wonderful spread. But we enjoyed very good food, of course. What were the compo rations and fresh food, killed on the hoof, as you might say, pigs and so forth, chickens, supplementing our food. You know, one ate very well. And I remember these Germans sort of standing open-mouthed at what we had spread out on the tables as our midday meal.
Where do you think that might have been?
And this was somewhere between Hamburg and Osnabrück, somewhere in North Germany, anyway.
Did you see the destruction at Hamburg caused by the RAF?
Indeed, I did. I mean, we were all set to assault Hamburg when they said, no, that's it. We did go into Hamburg, and one of my jobs was to escort the returning prisoner, German soldiers who were giving themselves up, coming down from Denmark, into a POW collecting cage in the middle of Hamburg. Well, this is rather funny, really, because here I was on a motorbike at the head of the column, and perhaps there were 2,000 Wehrmacht behind me and a 1,500 weight truck at the end. And Hamburg at that stage was mainly a series of narrow alleyways through piled up ruins with very, very little identification as to what street you were in. And of course, having to escort a great line of German soldiers through this maze of narrow lanes was a nightmare. I mean, if you got yourself lost, you would look absolutely stupid with this, saying, well, where am I? I'm sorry, I've lost my way. Luckily, I didn't, but it was quite difficult. I mean, I have luckily a sense of direction so that I was able not to get lost. But that was my main job before VE Day, was to escort prisoners in. Now, remember that they were well treated on the whole, but of course, if any SS were spotted, they were put through it. They were humiliated in every way possible in the POW cages by the chaps who were running them. And sort of just made to feel quite small, and obviously.
What type of things might
be? Well, I think they were probably chased around the compound with their hands above their head, and perhaps their trousers falling down, and their kit would be kicked around all over the place, and they'd be humiliated in small ways, not in any serious physical way, but just made to look small. And I think, as one heard quite often, members of the ordinary Wehrmacht were quite approving of this treatment meted out to the SS soldiers. Anyway, that was Hamburg, which, as I say, was total ruins, of course, except for some suburbs. And there was a surprising contrast there, because we were billeted in a suburb which hadn't suffered at all. And in fact, they had been building new houses in this street, which was a surprising fact to me at the end of the war, with all the privation that was going on in Germany, that they were actually still building new houses, unfinished houses, in this suburb. Now, I remember we were billeted on a very jolly German, I suppose she was a widow of the middle age or late 40s, who giggled an awful lot, and it was a very jolly time, because of course the drink was flowing on the day pretty constantly. In fact, after about midday, I don't remember much about the rest of the day. It was a total blank.